Chapter 12. The Deep Pool of Singular Memory. Benny Ago sat on the front of his desk in Illusk, long and slender arms crossed over his chest. Kimoriel sat in the corner behind him and to his left, the psionicist insisting on an observational role and giving the meeting over fully to Benny Ago, who had been high captain for some time and knew the city as well as any in Bregan D'Earth. Everyone seated on the benches in front of Benny Ago was drow, with the exceptions of Wolfgar and Bonnie Charlie. Kimoriel had insisted on Wolfgar's attendance, and Bonnie Charlie had been filling a valuable role, as she, even after the encounter with the gnolls in the alleyway, could most easily slip about the streets of the city, blending in and spying. One by one, the scouts had delivered their information, leaving the most important for last. Braylon Jankay. He was tying all the information together, and in a way that seemed to offer little hope for Bregan D'Earth's continued presence in the city of Sales. "Their numbers are overwhelming," Braylon continued. "It would seem as if all four of the other High Captains have indeed pledged full fealty to Brevendon. Luskan is a city of smaller size to Menzo Baranzon, and with all four of those ships in alliance with the invaders, we could not hope to defeat them, even if every other person in Luskan supported us." "And few will," added another drow scout. "It shows the fickleness of humans, short-living and without honor," said Dabne.
"What it shows is a city suspicious of change," Wolfgar interjected, suffering the scowls of many others, who had made it very clear they didn't want him or Bonnie Charlie in the room. "You offered them change, and they were only just beginning to see it," he told Benny Ago, and turned as he spoke to make sure that Kimoriel heard him clearly as well. "No doubt that change would prove beneficial for all in Luskan in time, but it also meant the weakening of many, particularly the strongest and most vicious. You demanded, perhaps not demanded, but coaxed, that they surrender their lifestyle. Not every pirate murders and steals because he has a future or few options. Some do it simply because they enjoy it. They prefer a life of grand adventure without moral boundaries, even if it means, almost certainly, that they too will find a most unpleasant and early death."
"And you label us the evil race," Dabne said.
"Is Menzo Baranzon really any different?" Braylon Jankay asked her. "Do you doubt the joy many priestesses feel when using the scourge?"
"We are far afield of our issue here," Benny Ago remarked. "When you retake Luskan, if you do, you would do well to determine the redeemable citizens from the others," Wolfgar finished.
Benny Ago looked to him, offered a quick nod, then turned back to Braylon.
"Our best hope is the chaos of the gnolls," Braylon went on. "Even Brevin and Margaster cannot fully control them, and their crimes against the folk of Luskan mount."
"And what do we know of Brevendon?" Benny Ago asked.
"He's a demon in him," Bonnie Charlie answered. "A real one, red-skinned and wicked, and with a swirly sword that'll cut ye in half."
"Aye," Braylon agreed. "That demon too may prove to be unwittingly helping us. Brevendon is behaving ferociously, hanging people by the dozen, and soon not a family in Luskan will not know someone who has died at the end of one of his ropes. The people will fear him, the other captains will bow to him, but soon enough, most will hold less love for Brevendon than they ever harbored for us.
But he's not the only demon in Luskan, and he has a considerable mercenary force that will never betray him, including the gnolls," said Dabne.
Others started to respond, but Benny Ago held up his hand, silencing them as he considered the information, none of which was truly new to anyone in the room.
"Archmage Gromp will not be persuaded," he told them after a long pause. "And there is little we can do without suffering too many losses. Bregan D'Earth is not a war party. I had hoped to find a role for us under the new leadership in Luskan, but given the power behind Brevendon, which we now know to be Matron Jindia Malarn, that will never be. No, we have to win here, and win soon, while Matron Jindia remains busy in the south. Continue nibbling on the edges, but let's focus more attention to agitating the gnolls against those most loyal to High Captain Brevendon Margaster. Push him and pressure him to greater cruelty until we can determine the best way to fully strike." He ended with a look to Kimoriel, who remained impassive,
and gave no indication of agreement or disagreement. These were the times when Camoriel Oblodra wondered if there was such a thing as natural reincarnation, or if, perhaps, the spirit of a sentient being could be injected into an inappropriate corporeal form. Both Ivanel and Quenthel Bayenry as possible examples, perhaps. Back in his own place, Camoriel could count his friends on a single finger, if Jarlaxle even was his friend. Certainly, the unusual rogue was the closest to counting as one. Perhaps Gromph Bayenry, perhaps Beniago Kurth, perhaps Braylon Jonquet, these were his associates, and with them he had established some measure of trust at least, and with Gromph he also held a grudging respect, probably more so than Camoriel offered any other drow or any member of any other race on Faerûn. But friends? If he had a friend on Toril, it would be Jarlaxle, and yes, he knew that was stretching the definition. But here, in this place, nothing was measured in that manner. In this place, Camoriel Oblodra didn't exist, other than to be a single colligation in the one being that was the whole of illithid society. Here in the hive mind, his fingers caressing the great pulsing brain, the edifice of connection and oneness, thoughts and memories became interchangeable and mingled. Study in the hive mind was merely a matter of searching what had become your own expansive knowledge and memories, rather than hearing or reading the words of a separate being. Camoriel often lamented that he should have been born an illithid. The hive mind knew this truth within the drow's heart, of course, which explained why he was so welcomed here. One could not easily hide insincerity in this place. One could not easily hide anything from the illithids. A large part of the individual that was Camoriel wanted to just stay here, let Luskin and Braigandeareth be the concerns of another. He could remain at the hive mind and caress knowledge itself, bask in pure thought, revel in memories as visceral as if he had walked those pathways in the lonely and singular drow form he had been forced to wear. Arguments came back at him from so many other corners of the hive mind, though. He was unique here, or nearly so. Only this synapse of the hive mind, this being named Camoriel, that existed in that drow reality and that world of Faerûn, could bring in such expansive experiences and knowledge of that place. He would be limiting the hive mind, and thus limiting himself, if he lost the balance between recipient and source. So he accepted it for the time being, and focused his thoughts as he searched. Demons. Possession. Phylactery. The knowledge was extensive, of course, since demons had been milling about existence since the beginning of time itself, and, given their potential for destruction and damage, had ever been of concern to the illithid hive mind. He wasn't learning. He was remembering, and that was much more powerful and rich. The memories sorted, the drow lightened his hand from the central brain of the community, ready to remove it and depart. Be well. Be open, he heard in his head, the telepathic voices of so many illithids who had joined with him this day to share their memories. They were one intimately in this last moment before the mental unjoining, and so distinct were their communal voices that he could silently and almost instantly thank them, each and every one. He noted most especially Peskatawav, the current most endeared to the central brain, a position that rotated among the hive, and one that Camoriel, as an outsider, would never know. He noted one other for some reason, as he lifted his hand from the central brain and broke the connection. Something about the way the mind flayer named Uwunifisk had imparted the thought struck him differently. This plan will not succeed, Camoriel told Beniago and the others when they gathered again in Illusk. Beniago's scouts and provocateurs had been out and about in the city for a 10-day, causing trouble, riling up gnolls, riling up the people of Luskan against the gnolls, even whispering dire warnings to the ambassadors of the high captains. There had been some fights, but few fatalities, and little progress in weakening the hold of High Captain Brevenden. Indeed, the Waterdavian noble lord now fully staffed an armed ship Margaster. The whole island was fast becoming a fortress, and that show of strength would keep the pirates, both invader and citizen, in line. and so Camoriel was reconsidering and being pushed toward his more daring conflict.
"Then what is left to us?" Beniago asked. "Does Bregan d'Erth desert Luskan? Perhaps we leave a minor gang behind to monitor and find ways to bring in some profit at least. Or should we go back to Gromf and beg him to reconsider his retreat from this fight?
Or at least convince him to reopen the portals to Gontalgrim?" Braylon added. "King Brunner will not allow the new events in Luskan to stand. If he can at last open the portals to the Silver Marches, he will have 3 more dwarven armies at his command."
"The gates are closed, and Gromp is too self-serving to reconsider his actions. The retrievers and the sudden gains of the Malarni have convinced him that Loth is on their side, and he's too wise to invoke the anger of the Spider Queen," Kiboriel calmly explained.
"But we're not, apparently,"
Wulfgar dared to say, chuckling. But he was not joined in that mirth by any in the room.
"We have underestimated Brevenden Margaster, or, more particularly, this demon Asbeel, who resides within the man," Camoriel explained. "He is formidable. They are formidable. And they came here as prepared for the aftermath as they were for the initial victory. Port Lass, too, is in their thrall."
"So we leave," Beniago reasoned.
"No," came Camoriel's simple answer.
"Then what?"
Beniago and Braylon asked together. Camoriel looked to the side, to Wulfgar, who nodded knowingly.
"We destroy them," the barbarian said. "We send this fiend Asbeel back to the pits of the lower plains where it belongs."
The looks of the drow commanders lingered on Wulfgar for a bit before shifting back to Camoriel, who was still staring at Wulfgar.
"He knows how to do it," Wulfgar told them all.
Camoriel almost managed a smile at that. He wished he was as sure as the barbarian on that matter. Something was bothering Camoriel, nagging at him. He felt as if he was missing an important fact. There was a memory floating about just beyond his reach, or several memories that were related somehow in a manner that would give him answers.
"I won't miss this time," Wulfgar promised them all.
"You should not have missed last time," Camoriel thought, but did not say or project telepathically.
His next thought following that unusual notion. Why did he care? Was that he had thought it out of frustration? But no, he now realized. He had gone to great lengths to protect Wulfgar in that fight on Brevenden Margaster's ship far out at sea. He had protected the barbarian with a kinetic barrier, giving Wulfgar tremendous power in one swing to reflect all of the energy Camoriel's shield had given him. Camoriel had done that knowing that Wulfgar, so skilled and powerful, would end the demon within his opponent, or would at least shatter Brevenden's physical body. Asbeel was proud and thought himself invincible. His fighting was aggressive, reckless, arrogant. Wulfgar couldn't miss. But he had. How was that possible?